Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
On this episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly, owners tend to get blamed by fans when things don't go well, especially in soccer. Anyone who watches the Premier League was aware of Manchester United fans marching through the streets chanting "Glazers out." But what do we know about the Glazers, really? What do we know about any of the extremely rich owners who are throwing around gobs of money at various clubs all over the world? Our producer and resident football enthusiast, Jordan Rizzieri, takes a look at global football owners, what they're after by buying clubs, and what they could do to better serve the fans who support their teams. I'm your host, John Gonzalez. From Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio, this is Sports Illustrated Weekly.
When things are going well for our soccer teams, it can be the best feeling in the whole world.
Well, in the final minutes of the final day, in a brilliant title race, mission accomplished in the Premier League for Manchester City.
But when things are going badly, we turn our anger to the players, the managers, and when things have gone disastrously bad, the owners. Who are these mysterious millionaires and billionaires who fund the clubs we love? Can anyone purchase a stake in a major soccer club? What does it even mean to be an owner? And perhaps a better question, what should it mean, not just for the team, but for the surrounding communities? It's time to call up some of our favorite soccer experts for a course in global soccer ownership. I'm Jordan Rizzieri, producer at Sports Illustrated Weekly, and class is now in session. As an American soccer fan, the first question I have to ask is simple. Why is ownership in professional soccer so different all over the world?
The reason why it's so different in Europe and South America, as opposed to the US, is because there's a pyramid system in those other places. There's a relegation system. And no matter who you bring in and no matter how much you spend, you better deliver on the pitch. Because otherwise, all that revenue, specifically your TV rights, et cetera, are just going to keep going down. That's not the case in MLS. There's already a sort of infiltrated bubble that's, you know, already exists because those clubs are never going to be relegated.
Here at Sports Illustrated Weekly, when we have a soccer question, we always start by asking Luis Miguel Echegaray, longtime soccer media mainstay, recently of CBS Sports and the Kay Galazzo podcast. I wanted to know why we're not seeing the kind of reaction to big spenders coming into Major League Soccer to buy up our clubs that we are in Europe.
It's controversial, it's complicated, but I do believe that the core reason why there's a big difference is because MLS doesn't rely on relegation. If relegation existed, I think more clubs here would be much more at peril to find owners that no matter what can inject a level of financial sustainability.
In fact, what we see in terms of ownership in the MLS is a certain amount of celebrity, from Drew Carey to Ken Griffey Jr. and even Matthew McConaughey. But what are these famous faces really adding to the league?
So if you're a name, a celebrity name that's coming in and supporting this club and adding some money and, to your point, some fame or your face, and you know, you do like a monthly Q&A on Instagram Live and maybe that helps you a little bit, so be it. What's more important, and this is what I see more from Matthew McConaughey actually, I'm very impressed with his influence for us, Austin FC, is how much are you giving to your community? And Angel City actually are doing a lot of stuff there. So I don't care what kind of celebrity comes in, just make sure that the community is being represented and being nurtured.
When we think about soccer clubs and owners' relationships with the community, with the supporters, perhaps there is no better example than in Germany. In the Bundesliga, the term 50 plus 1 gets thrown around a lot to describe how the fans are involved in the ownership of their clubs. So I decided to ask Matt Ford, football journalist with Deutsche Welle, to explain.
Very, very simply, the 50 plus 1 rule stipulates that the majority of voting rights in a professional company which runs a professional Bundesliga football club, that those majority voting rights remain in the hands of the parent club, the parent football club, and its members. In other words, its fans. This ensures that while it's possible to purchase majority stakes in football clubs, no outside entities, no external investors, no external business interests can ever obtain majority voting control over these clubs. Thus, this ensures that 50% of the voting shares in these clubs remain with the club itself, with its members, plus one share, hence the term 50 plus one. And this rule has been in place since 1997 in the Bundesliga.
So what does voting actually consists of? What are you voting on? What are the fans actually participating in?
It can vary slightly from club to club, but generally speaking, the fans will have a chance, usually once per year at an annual general meeting, to vote for the board or supervisory board. It's not like direct voting. Nobody's directly voting for the manager. Nobody's really even directly voting for the CEO. And they're certainly not voting for the new striker that you sign in summer. But there is an indirect voting system.
So when we compare this kind of structure and this relationship between the supporters and the club itself and where the money is coming from to what's currently happening in the Premier League, you're wearing a Manchester United shirt right now. We've seen a lot of vocalization from the fans outside of the stadium at Old Trafford with a lot of opinions about the owners of the team with the start, the first couple of games.
What's your message to the Glazers?
Absolutely get out of this club because we don't need you. You're a pathetic bunch of owners. You suck this club dry and all you do is just take, take, take.
Can we talk a little bit about the difference between those two things? Because it seems to me that there is a place in the Bundesliga for you as a fan to have a voice when you're unsatisfied with something that's going on. Whereas in the Premier League, there is a limit to what you can do with your frustration in terms of actually affecting change within your club.
One of the most common phrases that you hear from, I suppose, football fans all over the world, but I think maybe particularly in England and fans of Premier League and other or English clubs lower down the pyramid, we all, and I include myself in this, we all talk about my club, our club, us, we, which is fine. That's only natural. However, at the end of the day, if I'm being totally honest with myself, legally speaking, Manchester United is not mine at all. It belongs to the Glazer family, and it has done since 2005. I have no possession or ownership or control at all of Manchester United, and this applies to every other club in the Premier League and elsewhere in the pyramid. I might have something at Man United which is called a membership, but it entitles me to absolutely nothing more than what I might get if I have a bonus card at the local supermarket. That's all it entitles me to, ultimately. In Germany, there is a fundamental difference in that because of the 50 plus one rule, when a German fan says, it's my club, it literally is. And that, by its very nature, influences the decisions which those elected officials and then the board members or directors that they appoint, it influences the way they behave, knowing that there is an element of accountability at some point. When it came to, for example, the Super League, Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, they didn't even dare accept the invitation to join the Super League at first, because they knew it would have been impossible in their own club statutes to take such a step without consulting the membership. In England, there was absolutely nothing stopping the Glazers at Manchester United or FSG Group at Liverpool, or at the time Abramovich at Chelsea, or the Abu Dhabi royal family at Manchester City.
Notebooks out, everyone, because now we're onto something. So there's almost nothing stopping a singular person, a group, or an organization from taking over ownership of a club outside of Germany and making decisions that may or may not be in the best interests of the club and its supporters. One place that Matt didn't mention is France, in Ligue 1. So I called up Justin Salhani, a Paris-based journalist and writer who works for Oh My Goal, to talk about the ownership of one of the biggest clubs in the world, PSG. Let's talk a little bit about France. So first of all, it's hard not to automatically start talking about PSG as a club and their ownership. But can we talk about what makes it possible for an organization like that to even own a club in France?
In Germany, there is this 50 plus one rule. I believe in the Premier League, there's sort of like a board that determines whether or not a team can be bought by a certain entity. And while they have certain like levers in place or certain rules in place, those are fairly easily circumnavigated. In the case of PSG, while everyone knows that it is owned by the state of Qatar and the Emir of Qatar is effectively the owner, it's ran by and was purchased by QSI, which is the Qatar Sports Investment, which is essentially a means of the Qatari government being able to kind of operate and do things and say that, you know, it's not exactly the Emir who's in charge of things. In France in general, I mean, we've seen outside investment come more and more. We've had a lot of American investment in recent years. For example, Marseille, which is maybe historically the biggest club in France, or at least the most well-supported club in France, has had an American owner recently. International owners start to get in and try to get ownership in the way that you've seen in the Premier League and elsewhere. Monaco, which is owned by a Russian individual who is on certain lists that have seen consideration for sanctions in the US, but in France, until now, through French football, they've decided not to sanction him, which, you know, we saw in the UK with Chelsea's owner, Roman Abramovich.
Roman Abramovich has now been added to the UK sanctions list.
He was placed under sanction and had to sell the team and has since sold the team. So in France, there's just no sort of rule that stipulates anything like the Bundesliga, which I think opens it up to people being able to invest more freely. And like the sort of owners that come in can kind of be from, you know, almost anywhere in particular.
So there's lots of reasons why somebody would be interested in purchasing a club. You mentioned Frank McCourt, who owns Marseille, who comes from the LA Dodgers. He's got experience owning a franchise team in the US and Major League Baseball. I think there's probably some clout involved with getting your ownership on a really well-known, well-respected, globally recognized team. And that's how we end up talking about the term sports washing. First, let's define what the term actually means.
Yeah, sports washing is a means of essentially laundering a reputation. So for example, you know, you might buy a football club because it's a way for you to get in and get into new circles, to get into new business and investment circles or political circles. Particularly with PSG, that's what we've seen. We've seen that the Qatari government and various figures have used the ownership of PSG to make political connections in France, particularly with somebody like the former French president, Nicolas Sarkozy. Why they're getting involved is more for the political clout, but also for the associative clout. So for example, now when you go around and you talk about the state of Qatar to people in France or the greater Parisian area, you know, they might talk about things related to the upcoming World Cup. They might talk about the labor violation issues, because this is something that has been fairly well documented and shared among, you know, around the world. But, you know, you also see kind of the inverse of that at times. For example, when Lionel Messi signed for PSG last summer.
Lionel Messi has tonight signed for Paris Saint-Germain, officially ending his 21-year stay at Barcelona. He's completed his medical examinations and signed a lucrative 2-year deal with an option for a third year.
You know, a bunch of Parisians started to post things on social media to the likes of, thank you, Nasser, speaking to Nasser Al-Khalifa, who's essentially overseeing the PSG operation and has now also taken like a very high profile role with UEFA as well. So some interesting conflict of interest going on there. But in essence, you know, the reasons to get involved here, and this is what sports watching comes down to, is to change the association in your mind.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
And it's not just happening in France either. It's happening in other places too. I mean, we've talked a lot about what's happening with the new ownership of Newcastle. And I'm sure it's a complicated thing for fans of Newcastle, longtime fans who have seen the difficulties that the team has had in terms of coming close to relegation and who want to see their team be successful and who understand that, unfortunately, in the Premier League, that means you need money. You can't win the Premier League if you don't have a lot of money. However, when we see things like, I think maybe towards the end of last year or the beginning of the summer, we saw what their new kit was going to look like. And it's basically the Saudi Arabian flag, right? And that speaks exactly to what you were just saying, is that now when people see those color combinations, are they going to be thinking about the Newcastle away kit, or are they going to be thinking about Saudi Arabia and the country and the things that have happened there and have happened elsewhere in the world? But I think those are the things that we talk about when we talk about sports washing, is it's kind of like having your brain rewired and not even realizing it at the time.
There's a number of threads to pull out there. If you take Newcastle as an example in particular, you really have to empathize with some of the fans, you know, I mean, because I think there are levels to what's been happening, and there's levels of culpability and responsibility as well. Obviously, the major responsibility here lies with the people highest in power. That happens to be the Premier League, You can even argue maybe the British government to some extent. You know, Newcastle fans have been, they've been relegated a couple of times in recent years. And this is a massive, massive club with a huge fan base that was challenging for titles, you know, a little over a decade ago. The message that we've been receiving from watching football on TV and watching all the highlight shows and review shows is that the only thing that matters is winning and the only thing that matters are trophies. And if that's the message we're taking away from playing football, then the kind of natural end game of this is arriving at a point where, well, we need money. Anytime a new owner is coming in, there's going to be kind of like, great, just get us out of this guy's ownership. We saw what happened with Man City and Abu Dhabi, and we saw what happened with PSG and Qatar. So suddenly there's this association that, okay, we know this is problematic, but we also know we're going to get investment and we're going to win.
So maybe nobody has quite figured it out yet. From what Matt told me, it sounds like the Bundesliga has some of their own problems. And there's obviously plenty of problems in the Premier League and Ligue 1. In America, even if you lose basically always, you're never going to end up out of the league. So, you know, maybe there's no perfect answer to what football ownership should look like.
The American system is actually an interesting comparison because as a nation, as a culture, the United States is the preeminent free market, unregulated sort of capitalist economy in the Western world. However, US sports systems are among the most highly regulated in the Western world to ensure a fair competition. So it's actually quite interesting to see how that works. And we're seeing it in the Premier League at the moment, whereby it's no longer just wealthy business people who are owning football clubs, but it's across the state now where literally nation states are owning football clubs. Then you're getting into a whole different ball game of why are these people involved? If you're a Newcastle fan or a Manchester City fan, you can tell yourself whatever you want, I suppose, to make yourself feel better about it. But ultimately, the Saudi Arabian sovereign wealth fund, an arm of the Saudi government, no matter how they spin it, they're not involved in Newcastle because they primarily care about football or sport in Newcastle, in a city in the northeast of England. They're doing it because it suits the state of Saudi Arabia to be associated with a glamorous entertainment product all over the world, which is the Premier League. The same applies to Abu Dhabi and Manchester City. The same applied to Roman Abramovich, and he had other ulterior motives to be involved and to be associated with a high-profile Western asset. Other reasons why high-profile individuals or entities might own football clubs are arguably even more dangerous when you consider the damage that's been done to Manchester United by the Glazer family since 2005. You know, over £1.2 billion effectively stolen from the football club's own profits and own turnovers in order to repay debts and pay out dividends. So these owners all have ulterior motives to own these football clubs, and it ultimately leaves the fans, the supporters, the people to whom it actually these clubs mean the most. And these are hugely important socio-cultural assets and socio-cultural institutions in their communities. They end up being little more than puppets, to put it bluntly, for whatever cause that owner might want, whether it's sports washing, whether it's cash machine, whether it's protect your assets, or whatever the reason might be. The fans are the ones that end up being puppets in this, and the fans are they're held hostage because they can't say no.
So what exactly is the point of a soccer club owner? What are they meant to be doing besides pumping money into the team to be competitive? How are these owners supporting the communities that support their teams, that house their stadiums, that come and work on game day? Luis has a suggestion.
Every single MLS club should have a community-based department, and their entire job has nothing to do with like posting on Twitter or social media admin or videos, but it's literally going out there into the community and engaging with them and perhaps creating events, whether it's 24-hour day soccer marathon days, you know, trials for the under nines or under tens, food and culture festivals, whatever it is, just begin to create a tighter bridge between the club and community that has nothing to do with digital. The moment that you yourself show yourself in the community, and I'm speaking directly about the multicultural, underprivileged minority communities, the more you do that, the better served. I mean, again, I go back to LAFC, the Mexican-American power that is the soccer fan in the United States is so prevalent. And you go into that stadium, you can feel it. And it's not just because like Carlos Vela is there. It's because they go into the community and they try and create more relationships with whether it's an amateur club or a youth club or a school, etc. And I think that's the key. Like, every MLS club should have a community outreach department that specifically focuses on one thing, and that's engaging with the community. If you do that, you'll be better for it 5, 10, 15 years from now.
The kind of community engagement from the club itself that Luis is talking about also helps to encourage an outspoken and participatory fan base. Back in German football, supporters have been extremely vocal about their feelings on a number of issues, made clear through the colorful and vibrant displays known as TIFO. I asked Matt about how the 50+1 rule intrinsically ties the values of the community to the clubs themselves.
The very way in which the clubs are structured in Germany makes them much, much more accurate and embedded representations of the communities they come from. Much more so than Premier League football crowds. I was at Old Trafford in Manchester, and it always strikes me that how comparatively old football crowds are in England compared to Germany. I believe at one point in recent years, the average age of a season ticket holder at a Premier League football club in England was about 45 to 50 years old. In Germany, that is certainly much lower. It's certainly not 45. That's a result of the ticket prices being a lot more affordable. That's a result of unreserved standing terraces being present, because if you abolish a standing terrace and replace it with seats, suddenly you can charge 40, 50 euros per seat rather than only 10 euros per stand where you want. It also attracts arguably a more moneyed and perhaps slightly more controllable demographic rather than a younger demographic, which represents a subculture, which by its very nature as a youth subculture is rebellious. There has to be a space for young people to rebel a bit on a Saturday afternoon within reason, and that is very much present in Germany. So I think, like you said before, you mentioned the huge flags that capture people's attention. I think, yeah, they're great, fantastic. They make for viral tweets and videos and look spectacular, blah, blah, blah. But I think, as I hope is probably clear now, it's the tip of the iceberg. What is underneath that? The structures, the societal importance, 50+1, that's all beneath that. That's probably what's much more important than simply a fancy flag.
And what a great example too, because literally the people you're talking about that represent those structures are quite literally underneath those giant flags too. So
yeah, it works.
A great metaphor. Excellent.
That's good. I'll use that myself.
So what have we learned about global soccer ownership? Well, we know that clubs need financial backing in order to be competitive. But because of the global popularity of the sport, the trade-off could be investment from individuals, groups, and even nation states who are looking to benefit in the socio-political sphere as well as with sports fans. Money may equal wins, but at what cost? And we also know that with ownership structures varying worldwide, the rocket-powered globalization of top-tier soccer continues to widen the gap between the teams and the communities they once represented. In order to strike a balance, there must be true regulation of club ownership and the elevation of each community's values within the clubs they support. That's it for today. Class dismissed.
Sports Illustrated Weekly is a production of Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. And for more of Sports Illustrated's best stories and podcasts, visit si.com. This episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly was produced by Jordan Rizzieri, Jessica Yarmosky, and Isaac Lee, who was also our sound engineer. Our senior producers are Dan Bloom and Harry Swartout. Our executive producers are Scott Brody and me, John Gonzalez. Our theme song is by Nolan Schneider. And if you've stuck around this long, we leave you with this.
So actually, the first thing, Justin, would you mind just introducing yourself quickly so that I know how to refer to you in the podcast?
This is always the part that I like the least, just letting you know.
Sorry.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid Kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.